Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
A 2004 CIA report detailing abusive interrogation techniques, including torture against prisoners in U.S. custody.
Associated Press is now reporting United States interrogators threatened to kill the children of 9/11 suspect Khalid Sheikh Mohammed.
In another case, an interrogator allegedly tried to convince a suspect that his mother would be sexually assaulted in front of him.
Are you listening to the hysterical enemies of America? That would include the three talking heads you just heard. These are people who are on the other side. They're fighting for the other team. They have taken the side of Al-Qaeda. They may as well have, if we were in the Revolutionary War, as they say, turncoat, redcoat. In World War II, they could have happily put on the uniform of the enemy. I've never seen anything like this. I've always known they hated America. I've always known they were against America. I've always known that they hated the police. I've always known they've hated the military. I've always known they've hated the flag. I've always known they've hated the family. But I've never seen anything quite like this, which is why I'm not going to talk about it. It is obvious to me that we have an administration that is on the other side, an administration that has taken the side of Al-Qaeda itself. Don't tell me that Obama doesn't know anything about this. Attorney General Holder was appointed by him. He was told what to do. This is the same Attorney General Holder who released the Puerto Rican terrorists. This is the same Attorney General Holder who released Mark Rich. This is the same Attorney General Holder who has been dying to do this from the day he took office. The radical far left is now on the side of the enemy. That's my opinion. Now, whether we can pull out of this is another story. I don't know. We have no Republican Party to fight for the American people. There is no opposition party. We've never been here before. In the past, there's always been two parties. We have one party and the people. There's an invisible Republican Party. You know, you go to England and you see the Labour Socialist government of Gordon Brown, how inept, how corrupt. And you see that there's a conservative party in the wings with a literate head of the conservative party who gives speeches. Name the head of the Republican Party in America. Name one person in the Republican Party who will get up and say one word that you feel confident in, that someone who speaks for America. That's why I don't want to talk about it. Instead, I want to talk about San Francisco's economy and the hotels and the tourist industry being destroyed by liberalism here. I want to give you a microcosm. Two high-end San Francisco hotels defaulted on large loans last month. One was the 97-year-old Stanford Court on Nob Hill, defaulted on an $89 million loan. 3 weeks later, at the end of July, the Four Seasons Hotel, built on Market Street in 01, withheld payment on $90 million it owned. Okay, so that's two hotels in San Francisco defaulting on large loans last month. Now you say, well, why? You could say high unemployment. You could say job insecurity. You could say that that's part of it, and I would agree with you. But that's not the whole reason. People are still traveling somewhere, and they're traveling to places, and they're traveling to cities. But why are they increasingly not coming to San Francisco is the question. I think you can trace it directly to the mayor, Gavin Newsom, and his team of communist buddies called supervisors who are anti-business, anti-tourism, anti-family, anti-man for that matter. I've never seen anything like this. Sure, the hotels themselves may have some responsibility, but I'd like to ask you, the listeners, if you agree with some who are saying that they're not coming here because of the changing makeup of the city, because of the liberalism of the city, because of the rudeness of the people in the city, because of the fact that you can hardly find signs in English, that you can hardly find anyone in a hotel to talk to you in English, that the climate, in essence, the multicultural climate that is so welcoming to illegal aliens, particularly illegal alien drug dealers, is so unwelcoming to tourists. So I'd like to talk about the positive end of this. If you could reach any Tusum Newsom, the gadfly mayor, if you could reach any of the anti-family, anti-American supervisors who have stolen the city's pride, what would you say to them in order for you to come back to this city? And or what is your last experience in visiting San Francisco been? The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Or if you care to talk about the CIA, go ahead. Go ahead. See if I care. I'll take calls on that as well. Let us see. I'll read you some emails from my Facebook account. Nah, I don't want to bother. They're very good. I don't have to. I can't read anything anymore. I get tongue-tied if I read anybody else's work, even a letter, an email, an article. I can't do it. You know, this is an extemporaneous medium. Let me tell you something about talk radio. It's an extemporaneous medium, and I realize what's been happening to me lately. Because I am so enmeshed in struggling to get my name off the list in England, where I don't belong. After all, they released the Lockerbie bomber, a known murderer who killed 260 people. A known murderer! They released him for compassionate reasons, and the very same illegitimate liberal government of the United Kingdom, and to make no mistake about it, I don't care what Gordon Brown said, they even admitted that they consulted with Eric Holder, okay, when they released the Lockerbie bomber. Believe me, they talked to each other. They won't take my name off the list. So what I'm saying is because I have been reading these articles about my dilemma, and because I have been trying to convince you to buy Banned in Britain, I'm getting a little tongue-tied and a little exhausted, and I'm not going to do it anymore. I'm not going to read anything anymore. No articles, no emails, no newspapers. It's strictly an extemporaneous medium, and that's what I'm going to use from now on. So that's where we're going to go from here for now. Maybe it will change in the future, but that's it. So we've got a hotel industry that's ailing. We've got a tourist industry that's ailing. They're blaming it on the economy, which is partly true. I'm blaming it on the troubled fact that we have the most far-left radical government in the history of San Francisco driving tourists away and driving people out of the city with their hostile attitudes. San Francisco, Scott, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. You know, I can't speak, you know, about the traveling in particular, but, you know, I'm a San Francisco resident. And, you know, I walked out of my house the other day to notice that all the parking meters have now been changed to 9 o'clock in the morning to 7 o'clock in the morning. There's no notices put out of this. You know,
don't you understand? Any Tewsome Newsome needs to raise hundreds of millions of dollars more to give to the illegal aliens and the bums. So the best way to do it is to make workers like you get up earlier and put it in this pocket so we can give it to the bums and the illegal aliens.
And then, you know, and then you speak with the meter people. Well, they say, you know, if you have a problem with the park in the parking garages. But then the city doesn't also tell you that it owns 75% of the parking garages. So, you know, they say.
Did you know that most downtown hotels charge about $40 a night for parking? Did you know that?
Most definitely. I'm in the hospitality industry. And, you know, I have a business here in the city. And outside of my business, from the hours of 7 to 9 in the morning and from 3 to 7, I can't even park. So I'm stuck.
I hear you. But, Scott, let me ask you something. How many car windows are broken open every morning by the wonderful residents of San Francisco who are given so many services by the mayor and the supervisors, the wonderful people of the streets who go around breaking windows and stealing car radios and things inside cars? Everywhere I walk, I see shattered glass.
I pay $6,000 a month for my apartment, and I had my car stolen twice in front of my $6,000 apartment building. So
that's terrible.
It doesn't matter what neighborhood, like you just said.
I hear you, Scott. I want somebody from San Francisco to call the show and tell me, someone in the hotel business, I want you to lay out for the people how many different taxes have been put onto hotels by the anti-business, far-left liberal regime of Gavin Newsom. How many taxes are there on a hotel room in San Francisco? Okay? Chicago, Tim, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Dr. Savage. Went on to your beautiful city of San Francisco for my honeymoon several years ago. Would hesitate to go back. I thought the homeless were just terribly aggressive over there. Berated you if you told them.
That's right. They insult your wife. They insult you. The cops do nothing because they've been told that these are the sacred cows of the city with more rights than the taxpayer. And who did it? The supervisors, the communist supervisors of the city. Thank you for the call. I'm going to let it all hang out right now. You know, the people who are calling this show from around America have money and they travel. Have money, will travel. And many of them love this city, but they won't come back until there's a change of regime in this city, until the Al-Qaeda members inside City Hall are driven out. They're the Al-Qaeda against business. They hate capitalism, and they hate business. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? But there's more to it than that. And let me explain it to you. There's no art in this city. Now you say, why, that can't be. They pride themselves in their arts and entertainment. Can you name anything in this city that is worthy of an international recognition? Name one arts performance in this city that's on the level of an international arts performance, and you won't find it. It is a very provincial city, very much as it has always been, very charming. It's why I moved here. The weather is the best in the country. The fog rolling in over the hills is astonishing. But the radical left-wing Al-Qaeda members who have taken over City Hall have long hated business, have long hated tourists, have long hated real progress, and have taken the side of the bums and the illegal alien drug dealers. And that is why tourism is dying. Sure, the economy has something to do with it, but not everything to do with it. Other than looking at the fog and getting drunk in a restaurant, there's little to do here. It is an unchild-friendly city. There is nothing for children to do here. Nothing whatsoever. It's a city that hates children. And that's another reason people are not coming here. In fact, the supervisors, most of whom are not married, hate families. They sneer at you. They call you breeders. That's why you're not coming here. I'll be right back.
I left my heart in San Francisco.
Well, in his case, he left his mind in San Francisco as well by his politics, but that's not unusual for San Francisco's ruling elite. I think they all left their minds in a clothing bag somewhere in 1965, only they don't remember the hotel in which they were staying. We're talking about two major hotels in San Francisco. I'm talking High and Notable, defaulting on large loans last month, and the tourism industry being, let's say, on the downturn. Now, certainly the national economy has something to do with it, but not the only thing to do with the downturn in the hotel and tourism trade in this city. There are many other factors, and they're all related to Annie Toussaint Newsom, the incompetent, bumbling left-wing mayor, and the even more incompetent, radical, far-left, anti-family, anti-American board of supervisors. There's not a businessman amongst them. And so I'm asking you, the national audience, the international audience, the Savage Nation, to tell me what you would like to tell these bums would bring you back to this city. I'll be the ombudsman for the city of San Francisco. I'll be the ombudsman for my many friends in the restaurant industry to try and get the city back on track. And I want to hear you. I want you to call the show and give the world a view of what you saw when you came here, okay? A parking meter, for 10 cents, you get 2 minutes in a parking meter. 2 minutes in a meter, 10 cents, and then they pounce on you to give you a ticket if you go in shopping somewhere. You hear this? You hear what they're doing to business here? Now you wonder why people don't come into the city. New York, WOR. Dan, you've been here. What did you see here in the city?
Dr. Savage, you just struck a nerve when I could tell you I'm a former detective with the NYPD. My fiance and I went down to the pier. You know those guys who dress in the silver garb and they pretend they're robots? It's insane to watch. The atmosphere, and I knew I was in trouble when I went.
Yeah, the guy with the silver garb, I understand, is a supervisor as a part-time job. He makes more money as a mime than he does as a supervisor.
It's amazing. And when I went to the MoMA and I saw the urinal laying on its back, I knew I was in deep trouble.
Wait, where'd you see the urinal?
There was a urinal on display at the MoMA in San Francisco.
Oh, well, sure. That would be an icon in this city, a urinal. After all, it's used for many different things other than bodily functions, of course.
And the nice Midwest ladies, they were asking, did somebody make this? Why is this on display? We don't understand.
Yeah, well, see what I say? There's no culture here to speak of. It's a joke. It's something out of a deranged mind. You go into once great museums, and you find almost nothing to look at except traditional collections of art that have been there for a long time, which I love. But the tourists don't go to the traditional collections. They go into some major rooms, and they see the shoes of a yenta who died and left money to the museum. They call that, or a urinal in this case. They put that in the museum. I understand. There's no art here, so you're coming here for something other than the art. What do people come here for? The weather, the beauty, the fog, et cetera. And that's all beautiful. But that's not enough to sustain a tourist industry. When you have an anti-business, pro-bum, pro-illegal alien, pro-drug dealer administration, what do you think people are going to do?
I think it's a microcosm of David Dinkins in New York City in the 1980s and the 1990s.
But here's the problem, Dan. You're 100% right, but there's no one waiting on the other side here. There is no Republican Party. There is no conservative representation. There is no pro-business individual waiting to become mayor. They're all about the same. These are incompetent left-wingers who've never run a hot dog stand.
Leave you with a thank you, Dr. Savage. You inspired several NYPD officers, Boston, Providence, with your coverage of the Oakland outrage and the assassination of those police officers. We all got on planes. We all went out there for the funeral, and your coverage was inspiring.
Oh, my God. Last spring when those four cops were killed because of the liberal rules of engagement. Yeah, I met six NYPDs. And a couple SFPDs, wonderful men. We all had dinner down at the wharf in Aliotta's. It was a great night, Dan. It was a great night in one way, but it was a very tragic night, of course, in another. I understand that, and I thank you very much. I don't know what we would do without the men in blue. What would we do when the military is destroyed by Obama? What are you going to do when the CIA is gone after Obama? You're going to have his private army to protect you? You're going to have the guy inside the green room protect you, the guy from the streets of Oakland who ran Cop Watch? Is he going to be setting up the new CIA? Is that what this is all about? Attack the CIA and create what? Listen to what Obama said last year when he was running about what he intended to do once he took absolute power. Guys, do you have that ready? When you have it ready, let me know, because the people have to hear this every day until they recognize that we've had a dictator take over the country. And step by step and day by day, he's moving closer to his own national security force that reports only to him. Do we have it ready? No. No. Okay. I throw things at the staff, and they should have it with a button, but they don't, because that's not how it works. And so I'll back off. There's no sense in getting excited about this. New York City, John, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. I've been listening to you for about a year now, and this is something I've always wanted to ask you. How do you live in a city like San Francisco when you are such a true conservative? How do you deal with that around you?
Well, about 30% of the people out here are very conservative. They have no representation, but they know what reality is, and they know that we're living with unreality. They know that we're living Alice in Wonderland. The newspapers, the government, the supervisors, all the way up and down the line, non-business people, hate tourists.
Savage.
If you're going to San Francisco, be sure to wear...
See, I could have told you what Obama would do, because I've lived in the most radical left-wing city in America. In fact, it's far to the left of France or Germany even. And I've seen one incompetent boob after another take office. I've seen one incompetent supervisor. These are anti-business people who have never run a business. These are anti-tourist people who sneer at you when you come to the city. They tax hotel rooms thinking there's no limit to how many taxes they can put on you, and they kill the goose that lays the golden egg. Now they're worried that the tourist base is dying, the income is dying, and they're trying to say, well, it's due to the national economy. Certainly that is part of the problem. Anyone who denies that would be a fool. But anyone who says that the reason the hotel business is down and the tourist business is down in San Francisco only because of the national recession would be a fool as well. The fact of the matter is there are tourist horror stories that I'm going to open up here on the Savage Nation. If you have a tourist or tourism horror story, I'd like you to call my show so that perhaps these dumbbells who run the city will come to understand that they've killed the golden goose. And maybe the people, the morons of this city, who think that they're oh so tolerant and they want nothing but tolerant individuals running things, will come to understand that they need hard-nosed business people to save this city. Okay, let's go down to the callers. Let's start in San Francisco itself. Marilyn on KNEW, go ahead, please.
Oh, well, hi. I guess you must know that I'm one of the 30% that's on board with you. I'm with you. I see boondoggle after boondoggle. My poor mother and I are both on disability, and so is my husband, and it's getting more and more exceedingly expensive for all of us mere mortals to live in the city, but we're out in the outer sunset. And just recently, my mother had to spend hard-to-come-by food money so we could build a fence around our garbage, because the garbage Gestapo felt, oh, we need to make the city more beautiful for the tourists who come out there.
What do you mean? The garbage Gestapo looks in your cans?
Well,
you mean they made you cover your garbage out in the outer sunset, but tourists don't go there.
know. Well, we're three blocks from the zoo, but still, we had to build, spend $100-something to build the fence.
Oh, I see what you're saying. The useless employees of the environmental area came out and said, your garbage is exposed, cover it with a fence.
Right, exactly. Otherwise, we could get...
And now, how much do you think that employee cost the city? How much a year in benefits and salary and pension funds did that incompetent, moronic college graduate cost the taxpayers?
Exactly.
All right. Yeah. Okay, thank you. Look, I go out to the areas outside the heartland of the city. See, I'm very fortunate in that I have a couple of different places I stay, and one of which is in the city of San Francisco, and I've been there for years and years and years. I've always had a place in the city. I've also always had a place outside of the city. And I move back and forth at will and at whim, so no one knows where I'm going to be when, because I don't know where I'm going to be when. But the point I'm making is I'm very familiar with the streets, probably more so than the politicians, certainly more so than the supervisors, because I actually walk the streets of the city. They are dirtier than they have ever been. I'd like to know where the street cleaners are. I'd like to know where the street sweepers are. I'd like to know why there is so much garbage in the streets. You know, I love Fisherman's Wharf. I told you that. I want to know why the city does not take one of its prime tourist attractions and put it on the top of the list to clean. Why don't they send street sweepers down there? Why don't they force the homeless, give them a broom and a garbage can, and tell them the next time you want a check, come here with a can full of garbage, and we'll give you a portion of your check. Every time you bring us a can full of garbage, one of these bright college graduates who Mayor Newsom hired will give you $10. Otherwise, we're not going to give you any more welfare so you could snort it up your nose. How about paying them per can of garbage? Would that make sense to you? No, doesn't make sense? You mean you owe them the money? You owe them the money, huh? Sacramento, Roxanne, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, I was born and raised in San Francisco, and that was my city, and I explored like you wouldn't believe as a child. And my father, who is 90 years old, did the same thing in San Francisco. And I would like it if I call me old-fashioned, but I would think it would be a nice thing if they could clean the excrement off the streets in Union Square.
Oh, my God. You mean the bums are defecating in the streets?
Yeah, they are. And it's
pretty
bad.
Oh, God. Oh, my God. So you're one of the actual conservative voters who left the city because of the radical liberals who are running the town?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know there's at least 30% of the city that would like a business person, man or woman, of any race, to take over this city from this incompetent left-wing boob who cannot run anything, let alone a city. Now you go to the supervisors, they make him look like a genius. They're anti-military, they're anti-tourism, they're anti-hotel, they're anti-family, and they expect tourists to keep taking it? And that's what's happening here. They're blaming it on the national economy. That's absurd. Tyler, Texas. Tommy, you've been here. What did you see when you were in San Francisco?
Dr. Savage, I've got one bad thing and two good things about San Francisco. I visited my first and only time about 3.5 years ago. Bad thing is walking out of a restaurant with a doggy bag, take about 5 steps, and there's a 19-year-old kid begging me for my food. I told him to get a job, and I thought that he was going to fight me. And I was actually scared for a little bit.
Well, you should be, because I learned a long time ago that if you ever got into an altercation with one of the street vermin, even if they spit at you, you would be arrested for assault. They're looking for that. Don't go near them. Don't react. Let me tell you something about street smarts with vermin across America. If they look at you, look away. If they insult your wife, go the other way. Do not engage them. They are the equivalent of the person who is looking for you to tail-end your car, because there are legions of unemployed lawyers in the city looking to make a living strictly by having a tourist stand up for their dignity. And that's one of the reasons tourists are staying away, is because the bums are very hostile. The bums are out of control. The bums are dangerous. The bums are using the city like a toilet bowl, in my opinion. But there are many other reasons people are staying away, and I'd like to hear from you if you have a tourist horror story, so that we can inform the mayor and the supervisors what they might do to bring you back. You know the phone number here on the Savage Nation. And then on the other side of the coin, if you do come here, why do you come here? What do you love about this city? We know it has no art. There are individually fine symphonic musicians, but the symphony sounds like a junior high school orchestra warming up, owing to the fact that they had to put certain types of individuals into the symphonic capacity who would normally be teaching in, let us say, San Quentin Music Studio. but for reasons of affirmative action, they pulled the curtain back and they had to make the symphony look like America. The same goes for theater. There is no theater in San Francisco. It is all high school or sub-high school in Par, and that is why there's no arts. Tell me what you come here for otherwise. I'd like to hear it. I know I stay here for a couple of reasons, and I told you what they are. The environment itself is overwhelming. That has not yet been destroyed by the liberals. Eventually, if they could, they probably would see if they could charge you for the fog by the amount that you inhale. But what do you come here for? I'd like to know. Why do you come here? It's anti-family. It's anti-children. It's anti-tourist. Why do you come here? I'd like to know. Modesto, Ozzy, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, thanks for taking my call, Dr. Savage. Listen, I have three sons. I'm a single father, and I haven't taken my sons back to San Francisco for the last 10 years because downtown is a sewer stinking smell city.
It smells? You actually smell like a sewer down there?
It is. Yeah,
well, there's no jokes. You mean the theater district, the garbage and the feces in the street?
Yes.
Well, maybe they ought to spend a little money on street sweepers. You know, there was a period in the 1970s when I first moved here when they had street sweepers with rolling carts and brooms, and they actually went around and cleaned the city. And then there was a scandal that they were making $38,000 a year even then. Where are the street sweepers? I never see a truck going by with water on it. I guess they're trying to save the water because it's so environmentally precious. Thank you for the call. I don't know where it is. I know we could have had the Iowa birth here in the city, but Dianne Feinstein voted to make sure it never birthed here. One of the great ships of the Iowa-class battleships of World War II, many people begged to have it birthed in the city, but the anti-military fanatics of the city said, don't come here. This was once a great Navy town. The Navy is not welcome. This was once a great Army town. The Army is not welcome. So who is welcome here? Chicago, John, you're on the Savage Nation.
Mike, you stole my thunder. Great to be on your show. But you're absolutely right. I was born and raised in Chicago, joined the Navy, got stationed on Treasure Island back in 1987. And, mm-hmm. and you know, ever since that's just gone downhill. From Silicon Valley to them kicking them all out. Look at Hunter's Point. They went through all that rejuvenation up there. And what happened? Squat, because they told them all to get out. And then during the Base Realignment Act, they took everybody out of there. And then
the reason they made the military clean up the old naval base at Hunter's Point was so that Nancy Pelosi and her friends could swoop in like vultures and build their own properties on it after the government invested billions of dollars in cleaning it up. Don't you see a scam when you confront it? What do you think this was all about? What do you think they're going to do, put the military back when they can make billions of dollars, her and Feinstein? Thanks for the call. That's one man's opinion. One man's opinion. Take a look at the Presidio, one of the great military bases in America. Take a look at what Feinstein and Boxer have done to it through nepotism. Take a look at the fact that George Lucas was given a valuable piece of land to build a film studio for nothing down. Ask yourself how these things happen. San Francisco, Lewis, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, hi. You know, ever since September 11, 2001, there has not been equestrian horse boarding or equestrian activities in Golden Gate Park. The first time in 165 years that we've not had are used to horseback activities in the city, and it's all due to these liberal thugs that have invaded our city positions. It's just absolutely nuts. They've done nothing to save Golden Gate Park as a historical horseback riding park.
Well, Golden Gate Park is safe for the junkies. That's the important thing, and for other individuals who use the bushes for various and sundry. It's very important that you understand what the city prides itself on. Certainly it isn't horseback riding. It is making certain that the bushes are useful for people who stick themselves in the arm, the intravenous drug users, not junkies. You're not allowed to say the word junkie in San Francisco. They're called intravenous drug users. You understand that?
Right. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And the kids go into playgrounds and there are needles sticking out of the ground. There were cases of them sliding down sliding ponds and kids getting stuck with hypodermic needles. Utah, Robert, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I lived in San Francisco in the 60s and 70s, and I love the city. But now with Newsom Company running the city, I'm worried about it. After a father and two sons were brutally murdered there, my daughter wants to go to Berkeley University next year, and I'm not happy about it. I'm nervous about it.
There's a very high crime rate at the University of California at Berkeley and Berkeley itself. It has also been taken over by radical liberals who care nothing about the traditions of the university, care only about stuffing their pockets and their cronies. I would send this somewhere else. And remember, I am a graduate of the University of California at Berkeley with a doctorate, a real PhD, not an honorary one, in a real scientific field. And so it's not easy for me to say this. I would be very concerned about sending my daughter to the University of California at Berkeley. I truly would. But there are other things we can talk about with regard to San Francisco. Any tourist horror stories, 1-800-449, or any reasons you have come here or continue to come here. I'm open for business on the Savage Nation. Sacramento John, go ahead, please.
The only thing John, I would take my family there for, Michael, would be to the ball game, which I would get on a ferry at Jack London Square and over there, so I wouldn't have to interact with any of the vermin and run around that city. Or,
the stadium is gorgeous. I was down there last year. I'm not a big ball fan, but I went, and I really did enjoy it. It's something to behold. It's gorgeous on the bay.
Ferry. It's beautiful right over. You don't have to, like I say, go inside the city. It drops you off right there at the park. And the zoo. That'd be it.
That's right. I love the zoo as well. I still do. Fortunately, there are fences to keep out the mayor and the supervisors. So the zoo is a very safe place because there are only wild animals inside, as opposed to politicians. And therefore, you're safe from the bums who are, of course, released on the city by the politicians to frighten the middle class. That's how I see it. You don't like it? Too bad. Jay in San Francisco, KNEW, go ahead, please.
Hi, thank you, Dr. Savage. Yeah, I grew up in San Francisco, Dr. Savage, and I'll say I think that there are tons of things to do in this city. I mean, you have Golden Gate Park, the D. Young Museum. They just opened up the Exploratorium. Your last caller mentioned the ballpark here. There's a wharf area. There's some beautiful neighborhoods, Pacific Heights. There's some great institutions here, USF, St. Ignatius Church. I mean,
you're mentioning some very, very interesting places. But what does USF have to do with tourists?
Well, what I'm saying, Dr. Savage, is if you come to the city, there are tons of tourist attractions here. Granted, some of the areas in the Market Street and downtown area, you know, you have some issues there. But what urban environment don't you have that, Dr. Savage?
Well, that's why I opened up both sides, and I'm glad you were able to call and give us the positive, but still not a big magnet for children, is it, Jay?
Well, I disagree because, once again, I mentioned Golden. You have a bunch of activities that the locals know about. There are many locals.
All right, well, let me ask you, do you happen to have children yourself?
No, I'm about to be married, and I will be having children in the next
year. I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but, Jay, it's a very difficult city to bring a child to. Virtually wherever you go, children are sneered at by the locals. They don't like children because it's not a children-friendly city. It's an anti-children city. That's one of the main reasons tourists are staying away in droves. They don't like going in restaurants and being sneered at. They don't like going everywhere and children being put at the back of the bus, so to speak.
Well, I haven't experienced that. I haven't seen that in the city. I haven't seen parents who are sneered.
Don't get me wrong, Jay. I could have left here a long time ago, but I haven't, have I? I love the city. I'm one of the 30% who are here and despise the politicians and love the city. I'm one of the 30% who would like to see some representation. Unfortunately, I don't even have a representative in this city. I don't have a congressperson. I certainly don't have a senator. I don't have a supervisor anywhere in the Bay Area that represents family values. Do you know of one?
Well, then perhaps that leaves the door open for you, Dr. Savage. If you truly represent family values and you fear there are others in the Bay Area who agree.
No. I have no desire to run for office, let alone on a local level. If I ever did run for office, it would be on a national level. I could knock one of the senators out of her seat. As sure as I'm sitting here, if I wanted to be a senator, I could easily beat Feinstein or Boxer. You want to put that down? You can mark it down in bronze. But I don't want to run for politics. The last thing I would ever want to do is run for a local seat. Boxer and Feinstein are both vulnerable because they're corrupt, they're old, and they're old news. And they don't represent families, nor do they represent businesses. But I don't want to be a politician. Who would want a job like that? I'll be right back.
Savage.
It's a charming small town, don't get me wrong. I mean, one of the reasons I moved here was because of its small town atmosphere. But I had no idea that the small-mindedness of the small town would permeate the illusory city by the bay. This is the Savage Nation, and we are talking about things positive and things negative of San Francisco. I I mean, I continue to live here for obvious reasons. I'm amongst the 30% who would like to see a pro-business individual run for the mayor's office. I would like to see the supervisors thrown out. Here you have a city where supervisors pass laws to protect and shield illegal immigrant drug dealers who are underage. We hear you have city supervisors who pass laws every day attacking tourists in the tourist base, putting one tax after another on a hotel room. Here you have supervisors spend their every day figuring out how they can destroy businesses because they've never run one. And they wonder all of a sudden where the taxes are going. There are many, many, many historical examples of what is going on in the city. This is not the first place this has happened. In fact, I think it was Ibsen, I could be mistaken, who wrote about such a situation in the 19th century in one of the famous European tourist cities. I wish I could recall it, but right now I cannot. Next hour, we'll talk about national news, the unemployment, the deficit, the fact that Obama, the far-left college professor, the communist college professor, who has now run away to Martha's Vineyard to be told what to do next by the people who put him in office. You know, you say to me, I'm making that stuff up. If you really had investigative reporters in America, here's what they would do. They would go to the airport at Martha's Vineyard, and they would look at the tail numbers of the jets. And then they would trace the tail numbers on an ordinary website, and they'd find out who owns the airplanes that have flown into Martha's Vineyard during the time that the president has been visiting. And then the next time that fraudulent mouthpiece for Obama gets up, that Gibbs animal, and starts double-talking everybody, and the newsmen could say, well, how come so-and-so's airplane flew in there? What was he doing there? How come his airplane flew in? What was he doing there? How come her airplane flew in? What was she doing there? Then you'd have real investigative reporting, which we no longer have. Instead, we only have talk radio and the Internet. And I want to thank you for listening this hour. There'll be another big hour here on the Savage Nation. We can talk about the government of Obama taking the side of Al-Qaeda against the CIA. We can talk about the fact that health care will be his undoing. We can talk about the fact that we have the most incompetent president in American history, covered for by the most corrupt media in American history, if you'd like.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I left my heart in San Francisco. High on a hill.
Well, I've abandoned national politics for the moment, international politics. Apparently, you're burned out. We know that the president's an incompetent college professor who has finally hit a stone wall with his overreach and his overbearing manner, and his minions, let us say, Humpty, cannot be put together again. All the king's horses and all the king's men could not put Humpty together again. That won't mean that Humpty won't keep trying, but Humpty will be back next week to keep trying to give us you-know-what. But the fact of the matter is he's run into a stone wall, he fell off the wall, and all of these plans... government motors, government health. Then he wants to move on to climate change. They gave up on global warming because they know it was hogwash. Now it's climate change. They're God themselves. Now they're going to change the climate. You know we're living in global cooling, of course. It's the coldest summer on record, but don't tell that to Obama and the other liars who want to gain control of the economy on another level. Then after they're through with that, they want to jam 330 million illegal aliens down your throat. And on and on and on. Progress, progress, progress. Well, it ain't happening. And that's why we're talking about local topics right now, because I believe that the local topic of San Francisco's failing tourist base and why you're staying away, why you're still coming here, may help awaken not so much the incompetent politicians. I've given up on them a long time ago. It may help awaken the electorate who was defeated in this city. The average person does not vote in San Francisco. They've turned the whole city over to extremists who have put their friends into office for so long. And it all went along, got along. There was enough money robbed from the tourists, from the hotel tax, one tax after another, from the residents, one tax after another, that everyone paid. What the heck, what, they gave up on it. But if we could get the electorate excited about a pro-business candidate, maybe we could save the city from the radical extremists who have taken it over. And that's why I say, if you have a tourist horror story, or on the other side of it, a reason you still come here, because remember, many people still come here. I still live here. I'd like to hear from you on the Savage Nation. So let's begin in San Francisco itself on KNEW. Brian, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. Thank you for having me on. First of all, I love the city just like you, sir, but I work for a large security company. We install alarm systems. I'm 6'3", and I'm terrified to go into the city at night. And back in the day when I was younger, you could get around, nobody messed with you. Right now, everybody's on your back. They're trying to sell you drugs, sex, anything you can get through it.
Wait, you're in the alarm business and you're afraid to come here at night?
You got that, sir. That's bad. It's gotten that bad for me.
What kind of alarms come in, basically? Burglary?
Fire alarms, pull stations. We install and test fire systems. And the thing is, it's built into security systems, so when we pull our vehicles up to certain buildings, we are parked right on the street there.
I see. All right. Well, I didn't know it was that bad myself. Now, here's one for the record books. We have a terrible crime rate. We have a city administration that coddles criminals and attacks the police. We have a district attorney named Kamala Harris who has let one murderer after another off the hook. We have a DA who refused to pursue the death penalty against an individual, then went on to kill a man and his two sons in cold blood. She has just been rewarded for her incompetence and her gang coddling by, take a guess who, Obama. That's right. San Francisco DA Kamala Harris, who now wants to be the state attorney general, after destroying the city's police force through a lack of morale, after supporting drug dealers and gangbangers, she now wants to be the state attorney general. She's in Washington, D.C., with a special invite to talk up the success of her youth and gang violence prevention programs at the White House. Now, excuse me, she's going to talk about the success of her youth and gang violence prevention programs? This is the woman who took one violent youth after another and shielded him from the police? Yes. Democrat Harris, a longtime friend of President Barack Hussein Obama and a supporter of his presidential campaign, was picked for a star role at today's National Conference on Gang Violence Prevention and Crime Control. Now, if you believe in Alice in Wonderland, you understand that you're living in Alice in Wonderland. She has an initiative to control crime, which has failed completely. And the San Francisco DA is the worst DA in American history. And now she wants to be the state's DA. And nobody other than Obama would believe her. The phone number here is 1-800-449. I forget the number already. You know who invited her? Attorney General Eric Holder, the man who just said that the CIA is bad and terrorists are good. Eric Holder is a good friend of Kamala Harris. And Obama administration drug czar Gil Kerlikowske, another prize that we never heard of. The White House says the conference will showcase promising community-driven anti-crime initiatives from across the country. Can anybody listening to this show tell me that Kamala Harris has driven crime down in this city? Can anyone listening to this show tell me how she has disrupted gang violence? Can any cop in San Francisco call the show and tell the city, the listeners across the country, how she's controlled criminal activity? The fact of the matter is, she is the most incompetent DA in the history of the city, but she wants to be California's top cop. And who is trying to help her? None other than the most incompetent president in American history. So we'll go back to the callers. San Diego, Tim, go ahead, please.
Hey, Michael. You might remember, I lived in San Francisco before. I was there for 19 years. My wife and I had three children, and before they got to my oldest got to be school age, we moved to San Diego, to Carlsbad, actually. We went back recently, and I was just appalled by, well, first of all, the filth and the appalling bum-to-tourist ratio down there in, you know, what can we call it? Bedroll by the bay, Mike. That's what I call it, bedroll mm-hmm. by the bay.
Well, bedroll by the bay. I thank you for the call. Santa Maria, Andy, you're next up. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Michael, for the opportunity to express my opinion. As a young sailor, I started going to San Francisco back in the mid-70s, and I used to have a great time. I'd go to Fleet Week. I liked it so much I'd bring my family in. And over the years, you know, all my family from the Midwest would come and visit the city, and I'd be the tour guide, and I tell them not to come anymore. It smells like urine all the time. I don't think your sweeper idea will work because you need bleach to get rid of that smell. The sweeping is just going to move it around. It isn't going to get rid of the stench.
Mm. It's sad to hear this, but it's true, and we may as well let it all hang out. San Diego, David, San Francisco's the topic. Go ahead, please.
Mr. Savage, an honor to finally speak with you. I just wanted to express one thing, or a couple of things, but really quick. I'm an African-American. I grew up in South Central Los Angeles in the 80s, so I've seen gang violence, and I'm a conservative. I'm very conservative mm-hmm. in my views, thanks to you, by the way.
You better not tell anybody that, David. It makes me even more hated by the liberal politicians.
Let me tell you, that indeed is what I'm calling about. When I went to San Francisco, I went to a place called Ann's Restaurant, or in Beverly Hills called Crustacean. I was with my wife. We're celebrating our one-year anniversary of our marriage. She's giving me a Movado watch she bought for me, whatever the gift was. And I'm looking over, and she's giving it to me. The waitress was of the sweet type, and you had four other guys who were, of course, of that agenda up there. They made a mockery of the fact that it was our one-year anniversary of marriage. Now, mind you, they're blowing kisses and being very, very just overly, you know, aggressive with the situation. And, you know,
Wait, you were mocked in a restaurant at an anniversary?
On my wedding anniversary at Ann's restaurant, where you're going to come out about $200, $300 if you're going to eat a decent meal. And, you know,
That's sad. Very sad. I thought it was a tolerant city that respected all lifestyles.
No, they don't. They don't respect all lifestyles. And you know, liberalism is really sad when you can see that me as an African-American, I grew up in South Central Los Angeles. I do fairly well for me and my wife. We do quite well. And I'm a black American. And when you express a conservative view, you're looked at as like, whoa, you must have lost all your ethnic or historical background. And it's sad that liberals do that. And I was one of the
Yes, that's because you're no longer a useful tool of the Marxist agenda.
And you're right about that. And I just like to say,
yeah, but well, you don't have too many friends, I can guarantee you. I can tell you you're probably a man alone.
Well, I have some friends, and I express my views. And I can tell you one last thing, Mr. Savage. One thing about this presidency, and I've learned this from you when you told me that McCain was throwing the election, and it opened my eyes. The presidency is not a man position. I think that the people who are in power will not allow that to be won by a popularity contest. That is an institution in which they use to fool the American people and the public, and this country is going to do what it's going to do regardless.
Well, right. How much further do you have to go than they take this incompetent moron Bernanke and give him another term? What has this moron actually done of any value? Has this moron saved the economy? Why would Obama have given him another appointment? Because he's a front man. He's a stooge. And do you know that for the first time in history, a union boss has been made the head of a Federal Reserve in New York City? Did you know that that happened yesterday? Obama did that. He took the head of the AFL-CIO in New York and put him onto the New York Federal Reserve. What does that tell you?
It tells me that this country is bought, sold, and lock, stock, and barrel. And Mr. Savage,
the problem is this. We have been through this before. There's been corruption on this level before. The problem is, we did not have as many illegal immigrants. We did not have a compliant press. We did not have as many foreign interests controlling our currency as we do now. And therefore, the prognosis is worse than it was then for recovery. But hold on, David. I'm going to give you a free copy of Banned in Britain when it's published because I like your call. It'll take about 4 to 6 weeks for you to get it. In fact, over the next few days, I'm going to start giving out free copies of Banned in Britain, at least one an hour. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Savage Nation. A lot of other stuff happened today. As you know, MSNBC works for the enemy. It's clear that they've taken the side of the enemy. They're anti-family, anti-American all day. And they actually interviewed the most incompetent Secretary of State in history, Madeleine Halfbright, who you know legitimized the North Korean dictator Kim Jong-il. So she went and visited her old Yenta friend, Andrea Mitchell, who is the wife of the former Fed chief, Alan Greenspan. You see how it all works, government media complex and all that. So she calls up her old girlfriend, Andrea Mitchell, who for some reason, she rankles me more than anybody in the media. There's something about her that is this pseudo-breeziness, New York sophisticated, pseudo-sophisticated voice that gets to me. And she goes and talks to Andrea Mitchell, and Andrea Mitchell says things to her that you cannot believe. Listen to a clip 8 between Andrea Mitchell. Please, Andrea Mitchell and Madeleine Albright. Go ahead.
Did anyone reach out to you, or were you carrying any messages in any way? Did you have any contacts at all? Because you had been to Pyongyang, and you're somewhat of a hero there, having gone in 2000 and warmed up relations before the Bush administration changed direction.
Well, I don't know if hero, but I certainly was there at a very interesting time for good meetings. No, this was not the kind of an occasion where this kind of a meeting would have taken place. The North Korean delegation, in fact, left just after they saw President Lee, and so we had no contact with them, and I was not carrying any messages.
Clip 9, please.
I think that this whole event is very, very unfortunate. I was involved a lot in the whole Lockerbie issue. I met with the families many, many times, both when I was at the United Nations and then as secretary. We did push for there to be a trial, and we believed that, in fact, he had been sentenced appropriately. I thought it was pretty outrageous, not only the release, but also the whole welcoming ceremony when especially it had been indicated by the United States.
All right,
that
shut
it was
her up
not
for a minute. She's a liar, because it turns out, according to an article in the Associated Press, that the Scots consulted with the same Eric Holder who apparently was in on the release of the Lockerbie bomber. The Scottish government said it would release transcripts of talks between Scottish Justice Secretary Kenny McCaskill and U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder. So the Scots consulted with the Obama administration about releasing the Lockerbie bomber, and this woman is not to be trusted, in my opinion. Listen to clip 10.
I think we have to take the British and the Scots at their word that there were
Hold
no
it.
Deals.
We have to take the British and the Scots at their word. Why? Because you say so? We don't take you at your word. You orchestrated a mass murder of Serbians. You orchestrated the mass murder of 2,500 Serbian civilians, and you got away with murder. Why should we take you seriously, Madeleine Albright? Listen to this liar.
I think we have to take the British and the Scots at their word that there were no deals. The issue itself is most unfortunate because so many Americans and other nationals died in that terrible, terrible accident. So my heart goes out to the Lockerbie.
Accident? Did you hear her? Did you hear the Freudian slip? Here is a former Secretary of State who, on one hand, says that she pushed for the trial of the Lockerbie bomber, and then she says it was a terrible accident. Did you catch this or not? No, you need me to catch it for you. That's why I'm talking about San Francisco. San Francisco is a microcosm of the illness called liberalism. They inherited the greatest nation the world has ever seen, the greatest form of government the world has ever seen, and they urinate on it. They trash it. They destroy it. And they continue to blame the people who built the system for the system itself, when they are the problem. San Diego Scott, you're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I lived in San Francisco for 10 years. I think it's the greatest city in the country, but the people are the worst. That 30% you talk about, yeah, they're great people. But, you know, I finally had to move my family out and down to San Diego. It was just ridiculous. Unless your opinion is crazier than theirs, they won't accept it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's true. There's no tolerance here. It's the least tolerant city in the country. It's the meanest city in the country. People walk around frightened to express themselves for fear that they will be ostracized. I understand it, but I've learned how to live with it. I have armor, and I am guarded. I could care less what they think about me. I have nothing but contempt for the fraudulent liberals. You know, there's an old saying from Victorian England that says, "Speak with the liberals, but dine with the Tories." That describes Pacific Heights to a T.
Savage.
We're talking about lifestyles, and one of the lifestyles in America that all of us are just one mistake away from is the prison. We have the largest prison population proportionate to the overall population in the world, including China. In essence, we're a police state. And if you think that you're not a potential candidate for prison, you're mistaken. We live in a situation where any government agent can make anything up about you and put you away. Right now, there's a guilty man in prison named Bernie Madoff. As you know, he's the $50 billion man, and he was convicted and took his punishment rather quickly and without giving anyone up for obvious reasons. It was to protect, many people are saying, to protect his wife and sons and grandchildren from any further prosecution so that they can make off with the gains that he particularly got. That's what people are saying. Now, he is now claiming that he has cancer. He's now claiming he's dying of cancer. And he's now claiming he's taking 20 pills a day. A gentleman who is a Wall Street prison consultant named Larry Levine was on MSNBC today, and he was talking. He's the man who coached Martha Stewart on how to handle herself in prison. Very interesting interview. Listen to it.
Inmates say he's taking about 20 pills a day for his cancer, and that he does not have much longer, in fact, to live. Rumors of Madoff suffering from pancreatic cancer are not new. However, the Federal Bureau of Prisons issued a statement saying Bernie Madoff is not dying of cancer. Bernie Madoff is not terminally ill and has not been diagnosed with cancer. The same jailhouse sources to the New York Post say that the Ponzi schemer has stripped off his shirt for Native American sweat lodge ceremonies. Done with other prisoners.
You can't make this stuff up.
Another prisoner told the tabloid that Madoff has been making friends with the gay prisoners. Is pretending you have cancer, if in fact that's what's going on here, an advisable tactic when you come into prison and are trying to protect yourself from whatever may scare you?
Well, he might be looking for some sympathy, I don't know, from the staff, from the other inmates. But as far as him taking all these pills, it could be for heart medication, blood pressure, cholesterol, psych meds, thyroids, sure. Vitamins. Who knows? See, they go to pill line. He's in a medium. So he's probably not taking his pill bottles back to his cell. So he goes to pill line. They give him these little cups with all these pills in it. You've got inmates standing behind him. They're shoulder surfing, seeing, wow, Madoff's taking all these pills. And they're asking him what they're for. And he's probably saying, yeah, you know, I'm dying of cancer. So he's trying to blow them off. This kind of stuff happens.
To the extent to which he's taken to a community, whether it's the Navajo Indian sweat lodge crowd or the homosexual crowd, how do you think he's doing?
Well, everyone's reaching out to him. I guess they want to be Bernie's friend. They want to have the notoriety that they're running with Bernie Madoff. To get into the sweat lodge, it's like by invitation only. I've been into the sweat lodge a couple times. And they've got these in all the prisons. It's a religious kind of thing. And they go in there, they take their shirts off, they heat the stones up, they smoke sage, they chant, they play the drum, or they smoke anything else they can get into the institution. So maybe Bernie's exploring all kinds of things.
Let's pause right there. I got it. Now, why would an old Jewish guy want to go in an Indian sweat lodge? He could be smoking salmon in there. I just figured it out. Okay, go on. Let's see the next. He could be smoking a salmon. Let's hear the last one.
Let's break it down. You got the black gangs. Bernie's not running with them. You've got the Hispanic gangs. He's not running with them. And the white gangs are going to be the Aryan gangs. Well, they're certainly not going to take a 71-year-old Jew into an Aryan gang.
Okay, let's play the Indian music out of respect for the sweat lodge. And apparently Bernie's going into the sweat lodge where they can smoke things. Well, you got to respect all sorts of religions in America as long as it's not Christianity. That's the one religion you can put down, apparently, according to liberalism. Well, that was Wall Street prison consultant Larry Levine, another expert. Wherever you turn, there's another expert now on Bernie Madoff's life in prison and the rumor of pancreatic cancer. 1-800-449-8255. Life is a joke. fact, I made a decision last night. Woke up in the middle of the night before going back to sleep for hours, and I came to a conclusion, which is that, yes, I'm on a banned list in England, but let them go to hell. Screw them. They don't deserve me. Yeah, I'll fight them. Yes, you'll buy the book or you won't buy the book. One way or the other, I'll get off that list or I won't get off the list. They're not going to besmirch my reputation because my reputation will outlive all of them. The fact of the matter is I've written over 25 books. I've done very good things on the planet, and I'm not going to let a bunch of incompetent, lying, thieving liberals from England undermine it. And so my legacy has already been written. It's not going to be rewritten by these thieving criminals, as I said to myself. But what do I do in the interim? How do I deal with this without letting it get to me at the same time continuing to fight them? And I said, you know what? Years ago, you read Henry Miller. You used to read Henry Miller a lot 15 years ago. When you hit the same stone wall in your life and another, a different kind of stone wall, and you started reading Tropic of Capricorn, Black Spring, Tropic of Cancer, and Henry Miller had a view of life that it was all a cosmic joke. And, it, you know, it really struck me as true then, and it helped me get through many a bad night. And I've used literature before, and I'm going to use literature again. And that's what I came to. Now back to the regular programming. 1-800-449-8255. Someone's calling about Madoff in prison. Gwen in New York City, go ahead, please. You're on the
set. To say that. What do you, you know, I think the guy's going to have a cakewalk. What is he, in federal prison? You know, he's probably going to have flowers there. I mean, come on. There are no gangs there. He's going to get fair treatment. It's not going to be rough. It's a cakewalk compared to state prison, okay?
Well, but what are they doing in a sweat lodge? Why is he going in and taking his shirt off? Are they you think they're smoking a salmon that Ruthie's giving him?
I don't even think a sweat lodge like that exists, okay? I think that the guy, he is scared. He might have some illnesses. And, you know, he's in prison. He might not get the proper care, obviously, for obvious reasons. He's not going to be comfortable. He's going to die in prison. But, you know, it's not going to be as uncomfortable.
Well, wait a minute. What do you mean he's going to die in prison? Maybe for humane reasons they're going to release him to Libya.
Yeah, like the Lockerbie bombers, right?
There you go.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, maybe they ought to release him to Britain. That's where he belongs. He can go to work for Gordon Brown. Thanks for the call. Chicago, Ginger, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael Savage, you are driving me crazy. You are not helping your cause when you perpetuate the myth of Obama being a professor. He never reached the heights of professor. He had degrees from Harvard, and he got a job as a teacher of undergrads, teaching of some law classes at U of C. When he entered the room, they didn't stand up and say, "Hello, Professor Obama." They said, "Hello, Mr. Community Organizer Obama."
Okay, so he was a college lecturer, not a professor, is what you're. No, I understand the difference. I know the hierarchy. Obviously, it's something important to you as well. I use it for identification purposes, not for specific reasons unto themselves. When I say college professor, I say it with derision, by the way.
But no, that isn't how it comes off. It comes off as you are not helping your cause by calling.
Are you yourself a college professor? Is that why you take umbrage with my description of him?
What?
Are you yourself a college professor?
No, I have 2 years of college myself. I never went.
Oh, so that's why you're an expert on whether someone is a college professor. Thanks for the call. Thanks for correcting me. I love somebody with 2 years of college correcting someone with two master's degrees and a PhD. I mean, she didn't even understand the sarcasm, but okay, look, that's life. North Carolina, Bill, go ahead, please.
Yeah. Mike, I had a cousin on that flight. Name was Sandra Rogers.
Yes.
They found only pieces of her.
I can imagine that you're not too happy with the fact that Attorney General Holder apparently was involved in the approval of the release of the Lockerbie bomber to go home to die in peace in Libya.
I'm going to be frank about it, Janich. That's what the Scots call English.
Oh. Well, you don't have to look any further than some of the traditional Scottish dishes, do you, to understand the thinking?
That's right. I love haggis.
Let's face it. There's more to Scotland than Scotch whiskey, which I am boycotting. I'm not going to drink any more Scotch whiskey. I'll tell you that right now.
Been to Scotland 4 times.
What is the national dish? Isn't it haggis, sheep's intestines?
Yes, haggish. Yes.
Yeah, haggish. They eat sheep guts stuffed with what?
With it's in belly of a sheep stuffed with parts of sheep and lamb.
Mm-hmm. Well, that may explain their thinking. It could have been lacking refrigeration for a few months before the justice minister got to it. All right, Bill, I got to laugh out of you. What are you going to do? It's the same thing I would do if I were in a bar and had a drink with the guy. I mean, he's in pain. He understands that the world's upside down is being run by radical liberals. And that's where we are. They're working for the other side, taking the side of Al-Qaeda, pretending that they're protecting us. San Antonio, Sam, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, I got a great reason to go to San Francisco. It's sailboat racing on the bay.
Bingo. Thank you for bringing it up. I'm a boater, and I know that there's nothing more beautiful. There are actually some of the finest boating in the world is here.
It's the most phenomenal place I think I've ever been.
Well, I'm not a sailor. I am a power boater, but still in all, I love the bay's boating. The air is unlike any other. Look, I have a place in Florida that I go to. I find it too hot to boat down there. You need air conditioning to boat in Florida, by and large. Here, you don't need air conditioning. You know, you need to wear a... Even on a summer day, if I go out in my boat and I go out through the Golden Gate, most of the time I need to wear a sweatshirt. I need to cover my complete, you know, my body and head and all of that. It's gorgeous. Gorgeous.
Can I, if you're not dealing with the current, then you're dealing with the wind or the fog or commercial traffic. It's the most dynamic place I've ever been. First time I ever went there was 1980, and we did very, very bad.
Well, you're right. It's a great place for sailors. I totally agree with you. And speaking of commercial traffic, I pity the captains of freighters coming into this bay. Just as drivers have to put up with the inane, selfish bicycle riders around San Francisco who truck their bicycles to Marin County, for example, and act as though they were born here and as though they themselves don't have a car and they block the lanes. You go out in the bay and you see these morons in kayaks or in sailboats, and you hear the poor captains of the freighters honking a mile away, and the idiots won't move their sailboats or their kayaks. I'm surprised that more people aren't injured or hurt. I'll be right back.
Savage.
President, Leader Reid have said we're going to make every effort to come up with a bipartisan bill. And so you have three Democratic senators, Max Baucus, Kent Conrad, Jeff Bingaman, negotiating with the Republicans. And the deadline keeps being pushed back. You know, it was June 15th, June 30th, July 15th, August 1st. We're going to go every effort to get a bipartisan bill. But if not, we're making preparations to how to get this done without it.
Yeah, well, that's what you specialize in, don't you, Chuck? Let the people be damned. That is the great Chuck Schumer of Brooklyn, New York, saying that they're going to force it through no matter what the people think. Now, the headlines are, most red ink ever, $9 trillion over the next decade. The same day we read that the incompetent moron Bernanke was reappointed to the Fed. The same day we read that it doesn't stop the professor Obama from pushing ahead with his bank-breaking plans. Next headline, the Pakistani Taliban admit that their leader was killed. Some guy named Karzai and some top rival runabout even in Afghan returns like I care about that. I still don't know why we're in Afghanistan. No one's explained it to me. I'm still trying to understand why our men are there and dying. I still don't know. If you want to talk about that, I guess you can. It's not that interesting. Let us see. Tropical storm Ignacio on the move in the Pacific. Ruling favors Latino voters in Texas Democrat suit. You understand what that's all about, don't you? U.S. seeks crackdown on drug smuggling aboard trains. Immigrants fight to bring adult children to U.S. Ah, it's not bad enough they can have an anchor baby. They also want to bring their adult children in because we don't have enough of them. We need even more, so that's the next thing. VA investigates errant notices of fatal disease. I have no idea what that means. I'm reading you some of the headlines. SAT scores dip for high school class of 09. I'm shocked, just shocked, that the SAT scores have dipped. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. You want to talk about any of the topics I brought up? You want to talk about a topic you want to bring up? I'm going to start giving out from now until the end of the hour free copies of Banned in Britain, to anyone who gets on the program. Let's go to the first caller. My telos is down. Just put him up. Go ahead, please. Go ahead. Any caller is fine. We'll have to spell it out for you. Go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
Mr. Sat?
Yes, what's on your mind?
Oh, I ride public transportation in Marin County from Larkspur. It's just kind of adding on to what you're talking about, going through the bay. And every morning at 5:50, we depart and go towards San Francisco. A lot of times there are people in their private skulls or, you know, rafts or whatever they're on out there in the bay. And the boat has to slow down and blast its horn four or five times.
Oh, you mean when you see the freighters coming in around the idiots on the kayaks?
Correct.
And they act as though the freighter is disturbing them and has no right to be there. After all, the bay was created for their entertainment. It's not a waterway for commerce and fishing. It's simply a waterway for their recreational enjoyment.
Absolutely. And whether or not they're holding up, you know, 200 or 300 people on a boat trying to get to work, it doesn't matter because the four of them have to skull together in front of San Quentin.
Well, you understand that it's environmentally friendly. That's why they're superior. That's why they have superior virtue, because they're green and the freighter isn't green. You win a free copy, by the way, of my great new book, Banned in Britain, which will be out. So stay in the line. I'll make sure we get a copy out to you. Phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Next caller, please. Go ahead.
Savage, hey, I'm a longtime listener, and I'm a new business owner and a new father in San Francisco and a new resident at that.
Wow.
I moved here only for education. I'm in a very specialized field, industrial design. There's not a lot of great schools. But the story that actually I was going to call about, I know you love the Boys in Blue, and I totally support strong communities. So I don't know whether this is because they had their hands tied behind their back or what. I'll let you discern that. The story I live in the Tenderloin because it's cheap.
Yep.
And,
right.
You know, the people who live here, they aren't bad people. It's mostly the people outside the houses who really destroy these kind of neighborhoods. Everyone who's paying their rent is a good person for the most
part. You mean the bums in the street who are allowed to run wild in the streets because of the mayor and the supervisors, don't you?
The bums, the junkies, everything. You know who, exactly the prostitutes, you know the characters I'm talking about.
Yeah, but the police are told not to touch them. Kamala Harris, the DA, who is the most incompetent DA in San Francisco history, who hates the police, is in the White House as we speak talking about her success in controlling gang activity in the city. Do you believe that Kamala Harris has controlled gang activity?
From my neighborhood, no, absolutely not.
Somebody ought to send Obama a postcard about her behavior and her success right here. I'm going to send you a free copy, by the way, of Banned in Britain when it comes out. Stay in the line. I want to make sure that you get a free copy so that you can walk around with it in the streets of San Francisco. Austin, Texas, John, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, hello. I took my wife to San Francisco. I'm an inventor. I went there 3 years ago, and we stayed outside the city this time. Mm-hmm. And so we went to Lombard Street about a block and a half away, parked our PT Cruiser, which was the only thing we could rent at the San Francisco airport from the particular rental agency we had. We're gone about 15 minutes. We walked down to the bottom of Lombard Street, came back up, left her window totally smashed out. Never had anything like that happen. So we went to the police station. Took us probably 5-6 miles with a GPS thing to get there. The policeman was awesome, really sweet. Well, a short story is the 5 university students in front of us, all females, it had their car broken into. They'd had their iPods, their computers, everything stolen, term papers, all that. And as we're leaving, there's this other guy coming in, and I thought he was going to beat me up. He looked so mean. Well, it ends up he's talking to the same cop, and he says, my rental car was just busted into. So that was 3 in a row. And the poor policeman, bless his heart, he was the nicest person you ever want to meet.
Right, but his hands are tied by the district attorney who will not prosecute such crimes. They're considered part of the lifestyle of San Francisco. Well, that concludes the discussion of why tourism is dying in the city. I'm sure that the mayor and the supervisors did not listen, just as Obama is blind, deaf, and dumb to the people.
Savage. Warning.
The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Let's look at MichaelSavage.com. Look what's on here now. From WorldNet Daily. Michael Savage, Lockerbie and Humane Considerations. You ought to read that one. It's by Joe Farah. We believe Barack Obama signed off on the Lockerbie bombers. We're pretty sure because I know from the news, we know that the Scots consulted with Obama's Attorney General, Eric Holder. And Eric Holder, as you know, has a soft spot for terrorists to begin with. After all, it was Eric Holder, our attorney general, who released the Puerto Rican terrorists when he worked for Clinton. So now he approved the release of Almaguiri, the Lockerbie bomber. There's another great article, Panetta Vilified by Liberal Contempt, by Rich Lowry, the New York Post. Don't miss it. Also on MichaelSavage.com, U.S. sends Gitmo jihadist home to a family in Kabul. That's right. One of them, who was accused of throwing a grenade that injured two U.S. soldiers and their interpreter in Kabul in 2002, has been sent home to his family for compassionate reasons. Wow, that Obama's a real compassionate guy. Dictator Castro says racist right-wingers are the ones who are stopping Obama's progress. Had we only known. Ex-Hillary finance chief charged with bank fraud. Shocked, are you? ADHD drug abuse rampant among teens, study shows. Here's another one on MichaelSavage.com. You're not going to believe it. You're not going to believe what I'm telling you. A member of the AFL-CIO, a union boss, in other words, has been named by Obama to be chairman of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. I'm not making this up. Let me repeat it. A union boss, first time in history, named chairman of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. Is this the change that you asked for? Now you've got to listen to this. Chuck Schumer claiming there will be socialized medicine by hook or by crook, mostly by crooks. Listen.
Both the president, Leader Reid, have said we're going to make every effort to come up with a bipartisan bill. And so you have three Democratic senators, Max Baucus, Kent Conrad, Jeff Bingaman, negotiating with the Republicans. And the deadline keeps being pushed back. You know, it was June 15th, June 30th, July 15th, August 1st. We're going to go every effort to get a bipartisan bill. But if not, we're making preparations to how to get this done without it.
Schumer and his gang will push it through. Republicans or no Republicans, the people be damned. And here he acts like government-run health care is completely benevolent.
If you look at what the House has come up with, there's a public option. It's the kind that some of us proposed early on, a level playing field option. Let's lay this out. First, it's an option. In other words, in New York State, we have public colleges and private colleges. No one's forced to go to either, but you get your choice. The fact that there's competition between them makes it better. It is not a mandate, as some are falsely and deliberately falsely saying. It is just an option.
Schumer, why don't you just see if you can sell some Florida swampland instead? You'll stand a better chance than you will selling Obamacare. Just so happens that Madeline Halfbright was on TV today. Andrea Mitchell, her good buddy, was interviewing her. And said she was a hero in North Korea. You're not going to believe this.
Did anyone reach out to you, or were you carrying any messages in any way? Did you have any contacts at all? Because you had been to Pyongyang, and you're somewhat of a hero there, having gone in 2000 and warmed up relations before the Bush administration changed direction.
Well, I don't know if hero, but I certainly was there at a very interesting time for good meetings. No, this was not the kind of occasion where this kind of a meeting would have taken place. The North Korean delegation, in fact, left just after they saw President Lee, and so we had no contact with them, and I was not carrying any messages.
That is great. The servant of dictators continues to be toasted by the media, Then Halfbright went on to defend the British over the Lockerbie outrage.
I think we have to take the British and the Scots at their word that there were no deals. The issue itself is most unfortunate because so many Americans and other nationals died in that terrible, terrible accident. So my heart goes out to the Lockerbie families.
Totally sickening. Her heart goes out? Did it go out to the North Koreans who were starving as you were eating brisket with Kim Jong-il? Madam Halfbright.
This is a great story since I'm a dog lover, and I once had a border collie, which was an amazing dog, Bandit. I don't want to tell you what happened to it because I don't know. I remember I moved to Long Island, and he had been a California dog who used to run freely over the valleys. He'd escape every yard Bandit was ever in. The kids loved him. This dog was so wonderful, Bandit. And no matter what we put him in, he could jump the gate. And he always used to run across the valley and meet up with a girl dog. He was so smart, he would free her from her backyard. I don't know how he did it. And they'd go running around, I swear to God, in the valleys together. So he grew up like that. Then I had to move back to New York for a couple of years, and I lived on Long Island. That's not to be confused with Long Island. I lived on Long Island. And there are long guys there. And the dog was chained in the front of the house, and I had to go off to work. I came home, there was a chain and no dog. And my worst fear is probably that some animals took the Bandit and used it in some terrible torture. That's the worst thing. I don't even want to think about it. But this dog was smart and tough. He once fought a Rottweiler in the neighborhood and scared the Rottweiler. The Rottweiler didn't run away, but the Rottweiler backed down. I don't know how he did it. He did. So the dogs are geniuses. They're apparently the collies are the smartest of the breeds, or poodles. I don't know. But there's a new study out of Germany. It has found that a border collie named Rico now understands more than 200 words and can learn new ones as quickly as many children. And so they say that's good news for those of us who talk to our dogs. Now, if this dog has a vocabulary of 200 words, that means he has a larger vocabulary than Tony Soprano and all of the rap artists in America put together. They seem to be stuck on one letter, words that begin with an F. I don't know why, but they make a lot of money at it. But Rico understands more than 200 words. And that's interesting. So the researchers have proven that people who talk to their dogs are cutting-edge communicators, not just a bunch of eccentrics. Now, the researchers found that Rico knows the names of dozens of play toys and can find the one called for by his owner. And this dog has a vocabulary size about the same as apes, dolphins, and parrots trained to understand words. But as I say, his vocabulary at 200 words is definitely larger than those of all of the Goombas on The Sopranos when you add it up. But it's a very popular show, and people make millions of dollars an episode for speaking as few words as possible. So it just shows you that the more words you know doesn't mean that you make more money. In fact, in America today, the less words you know, you make more money. In fact, those who know fewer words make more money. That goes for politicians who speak in sound bites, and that goes for actors who speak in approximately 50 to 60 words maximum. And that, of course, goes for rap artists who have a vocabulary of about 40 words, and The Sopranos who have a vocabulary of about 73 words. So the old adage of, you know, literacy may be gone with the wind. Maybe it's an endangered thing to do is teach your children a lot of words. Maybe you shouldn't teach your children a lot of words. Have them watch Howard Stern's show. And to abuse the mentally ill, they'll get very far in the world that they're growing up in. The researchers put several known toys in a room, along with one that Rico the dog had not seen before. From a different room, Rico the dog's owner asked him to fetch a toy, using a name for the toy the dog had never heard. The border collie was able to go into the room with the toys and 7 times out of 10 bring back the one he had not seen before. The dog seemingly understood that because he knew the names of all the other toys. He figured the new one must be the one with the unfamiliar name. So it just shows you. 200 words now. And that means that if you're talking to your dog, you really do have man's best friend. Man's best friend. This is the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
In the UN, there's a multilateral arms treaty in the works that has the potential to do more harm than good. Joining us now from the Heritage Foundation is Ted Vroman, who's been watching this for us.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on today. Really appreciate it.
Ted, what's going on with the UN?
Well, the background to this story, Michael, is that on October 31st, 2008, last year, the UN General Assembly voted by an overwhelming majority, 145-2, on a resolution proposing the establishment of an arms trade treaty that would establish common international standards for the import, export, and transfer of conventional weapons. One of the nations voting against this resolution was the United States. The other was Zimbabwe. So this resolution looks forward to the creation of a legally binding treaty that would create common international standards for all international transfers of conventional weapons, small arms, revolver bullets, up to battleships, anything in between. This is a very worrying development. Generally speaking, the U.S. has an extremely strong record on controlling international transfers of weapons of all kinds. The U.S. is one of the very few countries that has strong export control legislation on weapons. It's one of the very few countries that routinely prosecutes violators of its own laws. It's one of the very few countries that seriously imposes and passes arms embargoes against countries that oppress their own citizens. What the U.N. and what the vast majority of the U.N.'s member states are trying to do is to pass a treaty that would hurt the ability of the U.S. to control its own arms sales, that would make it easier for terrorists and dictator states to acquire weapons, that would facilitate states like Iran in restricting the sale of arms to Israel, that would create a biased and irresponsible monitoring and enforcement regime around the world, that would restrict the ability of the United States to support genuine armed resistance to dictatorships, and finally, a treaty that would pose a serious danger to the Second Amendment here at home. For all of these reasons, it's vitally important that the U.S. continue to watch this treaty very carefully as it's discussed and negotiated within the U.N. system, that the U.S. continue, as it's done in the past, to protest strongly against the prospective treaty's bad features, and that it continue to try to bring friendly states to its side to reshape this treaty process and turn it into something that the United States can genuinely support.
How would they enforce this?
Well, this is one of the fundamental problems with almost all international treaties. They're very badly enforced. They tend to be enforced in ways that are prejudiced against the United States, prejudiced against Israel, and prejudiced against a relatively few other number of democracies. The way this would be done, probably, is that there would be an international monitoring body. It would be for arms trade like the UN Commission on Human Rights, notorious for its bias against Israel and against the United States. Member states would be asked to submit annual reports to the monitoring body, which would then pass resolutions condemning the nations it didn't like and favoring the nations that it did like. This is the kind of body that is almost guaranteed, because of the predominance of dictatorships and non-democratic states in the UN, to be biased against the United States first and foremost, and also biased against Israel. So it's not likely there would be any serious enforcement. In fact, it's likely that the enforcement would be in words only and directed against us, whereas genuine nations like Iran, which really do support terrorists with smuggled weapons, would simply get a pat on the back.
What flaws are inherent in this treaty?
Well, the fundamental flaw inherent in any treaty like this is that the United Nations is very simply a club for states. That's who's in it. Every nation in the world, essentially, is a member of the United Nations. Some nations in the world are good, the United States, so other democracies. Many nations are sort of indifferent, sort of mediocre, and quite a few of them are very bad, dictatorships. Now, the basic problem with any treaty like this is that the treaty that is drawn up is going to reflect the interests of the states that are inside the UN. And a lot of the states inside the UN aren't very good. So the fundamental problem with a treaty like this, just as with human rights treaties, is that the UN does not contain a majority of responsible democracies. Therefore, the treaty will be drawn up in a bad and ineffective way, and the monitoring of the treaty will be done in such a way that is biased against the United States and democracies in general, and in favor of dictatorships and terrorists, because dictatorships, terrorists, and neutralist states form the majority of the members of the United Nations. That's the fundamental problem with treaties like this, be they about arms control or human rights.
Well, what do you think we can do about it, and will this happen?
First of all, we need to bear in mind that we have probably 2 years until the UN concludes its treaty-making process on this subject. So the first thing we need to do is not panic and think it's going to happen tomorrow. We need to keep our eyes very carefully on this to continue to pressure other countries to act in a responsible way, especially democracies who should be on our side on this subject, to continue to speak, as I'm pleased to say we have been speaking, within the treaty-making process against all the negative features of this treaty, and to continue to raise concern inside the UN and outside of it against the negative aspects of this treaty. Now, at the end of the day, if we're unsuccessful in achieving our aims through diplomacy, we're going to be faced with a choice of signing or not signing, ratifying or not ratifying this treaty. In that case, obviously, we must refuse to sign and ratify. And there are many tests that we can use to judge whether the treaty that emerges at the end of the day is one that we can really sign and ratify with good conscience.
In conclusion, what do you think will happen?
I think it's extremely likely that the United Nations will end up drawing up a treaty of some sort. If you take a look at the vote in the UN General Assembly, 145-2, it's obvious that almost the overwhelming majority of states in the world believe this is something that is in their interest to be really in favor of, or at least to pretend to be in favor of. So it's very likely indeed that the UN is going to adopt a treaty. And if they adopt a treaty along the lines the General Assembly has recommended, it will be a bad and irresponsible treaty that the U.S. should continue to oppose. Right now, though, we still have time to stay in the process and to continue to make our point of view as clear as possible, and that's exactly what we should do.
Ted Broman, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Thanks, Michael. Real pleasure talking with you about this today, and I hope you'll continue to keep a close eye on this important issue.
I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
You've heard me talk about the release of the Lockerbie bomber and the outrage that's ensuing over the compassionate release. Joining us today is Niall Gardner with his view on Gordon Brown's involvement, even at a distance, in this horrible injustice.
The Prime Minister has finally broken his silence over the shameful return to Libya of the Lockerbie bomber 5 days after the event. It is too little, too late. Why has it taken British Prime Minister Gordon Brown nearly a week to even express an opinion over the appalling hero's welcome received by al-Megrahi in Tripoli amid scenes that have sparked outrage and fury in the United States, as well as widespread revulsion at home in Britain? This is not leadership, but moral cowardice on the part of an increasingly spineless Prime Minister who is afraid of offending an odious but oil-rich tyrant with a long history of backing terrorism against Britain and America, as well as brutalizing his own people. Brown declares that he was, quote, angry and repulsed by the abhorrent display put on by the Libyan regime, but clearly not angry enough to condemn the actual release by Scottish authorities of a convicted terrorist found guilty of murdering 270 people, including 52 Britons. His half-hearted comments reflect the ambivalence of the Labour government over terrorism, exemplified by Foreign Secretary David Miliband's recent declaration to BBC Radio 4 that terrorism was justified in certain circumstances. Gordon Brown's pathetic response will do little to soothe the mounting tension between the United States and Great Britain over the Lockerbie issue, or the heartfelt anger of many of the grieving families of the victims of the Lockerbie bombing.
Well, Brown says he wasn't involved, but do you think Brown was trying to accomplish something?
Brown has placed the appeasement of a dictatorial regime above the concerns of Britain's closest ally and continues to undermine the Anglo-American special relationship. It is also highly significant that Brown refused to criticise the actions of Kenny McCaskill, the Scottish Justice Secretary, even though members of his own party have strongly attacked the SNP-led Scottish administration over the issue. The PM's denials over any British government involvement in McCaskill's decision carried an air of desperation against a backdrop of mounting evidence of high-level contacts between the Labour government and Colonel Gaddafi's inner circle. The Prime Minister's spectacularly unconvincing performance will only add to the pressure on Brown to come clean over the exact details of his own discussions with Gaddafi, as well as those between Lord Mandelson and Gaddafi's son, Saif. He has done himself no favours at all by refusing to address the three central questions that need to be answered. Did Gordon Brown and senior British government ministers support the freeing of Megrahi? What pressure was applied by the Labour government to secure Megrahi's release by Scottish authorities? And was an agreement struck between London and Tripoli that Megrahi should walk free? The Brown government's lack of transparency on this issue must be challenged in the coming weeks and months, ideally through an independent inquiry. If left unresolved, the Lockerbie bomber scandal will undercut transatlantic intelligence and judicial cooperation and will lead to growing tensions in the Anglo-American alliance, a dangerous course that is distinctly against the British national interest.
Do you think this will hurt our special alliance with the UK?
It is important not to underestimate the damage that is being inflicted on the Anglo-American alliance, the strongest and most important partnership in the world, by the Lockerbie bomber fiasco. The release of a mass murdering terrorist responsible for the deaths of 180 Americans is viewed by tens of millions in the US as a betrayal by America's closest friend. Brown and his ministers, including Mandelson and Foreign Secretary David Miliband, must come clean over the whole affair, and an inquiry into exactly what transpired is the best way to ensure that happens. This was a shameful day for Scotland and for Britain. Terrorism and the brutal rogue regimes that back them are the biggest winners. This is how wars are lost and great nations decline. Megrahi walks a free man, whisked off by luxury jet to Tripoli, looking forward to a glorious reception in his home country as a returning hero before an adoring crowd of thousands. This is not compassion or smart power. It is a humiliating daylight mugging by our enemies.
Thanks for the report, Niall. So last night, I'm in bed, again, watching too much television. I'm starting to get embarrassed now. The weather's bad, so I have an excuse to stay home and watch television, and I do it, and I shouldn't. Because when the children were young, we didn't have a television. I refused to let them watch TV. I was one of those. But they both turned out great. Maybe it helped. But now I find myself watching television at night, and too much of it, mainly movies. In fact, either the History Channel, Military History, the Science Channel, National Geographic, or a movie. So late at night, I'm watching a movie from 1948 that had me captivated for a number of reasons. I don't know the name of it, but it was about an FBI agent who goes undercover into the underworld, pretends to be a criminal. And it was so unbelievably bad that I couldn't stop watching it. You know, and now we walk down the halls of the FBI where J. Edgar Hoover. Remember those movies? The guys all had those Dick Tracy suits. So I'm watching the movie, and I start to see certain things in it. A lot of the characters were from real life. When they went into a gym in Philadelphia where the scenes were shot, they were real boxers training in a gym, which was very interesting to watch. The characters. Where are the men like that? I ask myself, what happened to men that they've all become almost homogenized in this country? When I was a young boy, the men were all, like, weird-looking. Guys had, like, nasal hair, ear hair. But aside from that, I'm doing that to attract your eyes and ears to what I'm saying to you. The men look different. Now everyone has a homogenized, pasteurized, aluminumized look. I don't understand what happened to my country. Men were very unique. I'm saying, you take a gym full of white men, they all look different. They had weird faces. Now everyone has the same kind of, like, idiotic grin. But anyway, so the movie's about an FBI agent who goes undercover and gets into the rackets, whatever, in order to bust him. So, you know, I just saw the movie with Jack Nicholson. What is it called? The Untouchables. I forget. The Untouched. I don't even remember the movie's name. Beowulf, help me out. The Departed. And it was excellent. I really liked Nicholson. I liked DiCaprio. I liked Matt Damon. They were all good in the movie, and the movie was very captivating. But a good portion of the plot was taken directly from this 1948 slap them together and, you know, throw it out there movie. Now, that's not why I'm talking about it. In the movie, there's a quick scene about them wanting a fighter who looks like he's going to be the favorite to take a fall for money. You know, take a dive, in other words. In other words, he's the favorite, and they say to him, if you go down in the third round, we'll make a lot of money because you're the favorite. And in all those movies from the 45 era up until about when the hippie scum took over the movie business, after the hippie communist scum from New York City took over the movie business, most of the movies were about temptations and honor. A fighter was set. It was said, you take a dive and you'll make a lot of money. And it was the tension of the fighter saying, no, I have honor. I will not take a dive. And what usually happened to him is he got beaten up or killed. Or you go back to On the Waterfront with Marlon Brando, that great movie. What was that all about? That was about honor. He was unwilling to take a dive, in other words, and he died for it. So the movies were always about the temptations and the honor of the man who would not accept the temptation for money, for the quick buck. That's what the tension was. That's what the storyline was. That's what America grew up on. That's what America became strong on. Now you got Murdoch, who's into the quick buck, and so he'll take the temptation for a higher rating and a quicker buck. No honor. Do you understand what I'm saying to you or not? How a society can be formed by its art, and you can't condemn every movie ever made. That would be absurd. Some are good, some are bad, some are indifferent. Some are funny, some are not funny, blah, blah, blah. But what I'm getting at is there were movies about morality in the days that I grew up. For example, crime never paid. You never could see the bad guy win in a movie when I grew up. My father taught me that. He said, you notice, Michael, every movie the bad guy gets caught in the end. Now we know that's nonsense. All you got to do is look at the U.S. Senate. We understand that. But in those days, you were conditioned by your movie to realize you'd get caught in the end. So I asked my father, why is that? He said, well, the FBI worked out something with Hollywood where Hollywood agreed never to show the bad guy winning because they didn't want to encourage people to go into that line of work. Now, compare that to the movies being produced now by the hippie pothead scum from hell in the movie business today, where the bad guy is always shown to win and the straight guy is shown to be a moron. Play On the Waterfront. Then I'll go back.
Charlie, it was you. You remember that night in the garden, you came down my dressing room and said, kid, this ain't your night. We're going for the price on Wilson. You remember that? This ain't your night. My night, I could have taken Wilson apart. So what happens? He gets the title shot outdoors in a ballpark, and what do I get? A one-way ticket to Palookaville. You was my brother, Charlie. You should have looked out for me a little bit. You should have taken care of me just a little bit so I wouldn't have to take them dives for the short-end money.
Well, I had some bets down for you. You saw some money.
You don't understand. I could have had class. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody instead of a bum, which is what I am. Let's face it.
All right, we got the picture. Get out the Kleenex. I could have had class. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody instead of a bum. Now, what you have today are people who are bums, who have no class, who think they're somebody. You get the picture? Do you understand how hard the job is that I do to try to put everything into context? It's almost impossible. When you have such power that they can turn upside down, straight up, and you don't even know which way is up anymore, and you don't know what honor is anymore. But I hope you understood what I'm telling you, that the movies in those days were always about a hero being tempted to take a dive for money, for example, and not taking it, and paying the consequences. He didn't wind up with an award for it. Today, as I am trying to tell you, there is no class. They're nobodies pretending to be somebody simply because they took a quick buck. This is the Savage Nation. I'll be back.
Savage.
Keep
2004 CIA report detailing abusive interrogation techniques, including torture against prisoners in U.S. custody.
Associated Press is now reporting United States interrogators threatened to kill the children of 9/11 suspect Khalid Sheikh Mohammed.
In another case, an interrogator allegedly tried to convince a suspect that his mother would be sexually assaulted in front of him.
Are you listening to the hysterical enemies of America? That would include the three talking heads you just heard. These are people who are on the other side. They're fighting for the other team. They have taken the side of Al-Qaeda. They may as well have, if we were in the Revolutionary War, as they say, turncoat, redcoat. In World War II, they could have happily put on the uniform of the enemy. I've never seen anything like this. I've always known they hated America. I've always known they were against America. I've always known that they hated the police. I've always known they hated the military. I've always known they've hated the flag. I've always known they've hated the family. But I've never seen anything quite like this, which is why I'm not going to talk about it. It is obvious to me that we have an administration that is on the other side, an administration that has taken the side of Al-Qaeda itself. Don't tell me that Obama doesn't know anything about this. Attorney General Holder was appointed by him. He was told what to do. This is the same Attorney General Holder who released the Puerto Rican terrorists. This is the same Attorney General Holder who released Mark Rich. This is the same Attorney General Holder who has been dying to do this from the day he took office. The radical far left is now on the side of the enemy. That's my opinion. Now, whether we can pull out of this is another story. I don't know. We have no Republican Party to fight for the American people. There is no opposition party. We've never been here before. In the past, there's always been two parties. We have one party and the people. There's an invisible Republican Party. You know, you go to England and you see the Labour Socialist government of Gordon Brown, how inept, how corrupt. And you see that there's a conservative party in the wings with a literate head of the conservative party who gives speeches. Name the head of the Republican Party in America. Name one person in the Republican Party who will get up and say one word that you feel confident in, that someone who speaks for America. That's why I don't want to talk about it. First of all, I had the best Chinese meal of my life at Shanghai 1930. Let me get it out of the way. Yes, my friends own the restaurant. No, I get nothing for this. I haven't been there in over a year. But, you know, there's such a difference between Chinese food that you know and high-end cuisine that it's worth talking about. The reason I went is because they gave me a private dining room for four people. So I wasn't seen. I was not even heard. I was like a child, not seen nor heard, which is the only way I can eat. I don't like restaurants because I can't stand listening to other people talk. Call it a quirk. Call it a quirk of mine. I don't go out to dinner to listen to people scream. I don't go out to dinner to go listen to people scream and laugh. It doesn't entertain me. I don't need that kind of sensual stimulation. I'd prefer to eat a takeout meal in front of a television set. But anyway, I went out there, and I'm not going to describe the menu. There's one thing they have that no one else has, which is egg white rice. It's amazing. Very, very interesting dish. And then the usual, you know, the steamed fish, but and all sorts of other things. It was really lovely in a private room. Wonderful. And I suggest you try it if you can. They're very nice people who own it, and the food is really great. Shanghai 1930 in San Francisco. I have no ownership, nor do I get anything from this. And I just want you to know where it's a little different. Sunday, I went out on my boat with the captain. We would turn right at Point Bonita. If you go out under the Golden Gate Bridge, sailors know this. They do it all the time. I'm pretty much strictly a bay boater. The bay can be pretty exciting unto itself. On a windy day, the bay is like an inland sea. I mean, you can get some nice swell, some nice waves, spray in your face, crossing the bay to and from San Francisco. But if you go out under the Golden Gate Bridge and you drive about, 5 miles, you hit Point Bonita, which is the last point of land, and then you turn north in the channel. And about 5 miles out is a place you're never supposed to go over. It's like no man's land called the Potato Patch, because they sometimes get monster rollers coming in over there, so you don't go there. And we went up the coast, and it wasn't very exciting. It was fulfilling. I got to tell you something. When I came back from the ride in my boat, which I've had 6 years, the Grand Banks is the greatest yacht ever made, by the way. Again, the boat's 6 years old, and everyone says, oh, Mike, how long do you think you're going to live? Get yourself another boat. You deserve it. You know, you can afford it. You know, I got to talk about something. Why get rid of something that's perfect? It's 6 years old. It has less than 400 hours on it, and I'm not here to auction the boat off. But this boat holds the water like no other boat I've ever been on. And the newer boats change the hull design from a Ed Monk design, which is a semi-displacement trawler hull. The boat will still do 15 to 18 knots
with twin 365 turbo horsepower Cummins diesels, American made, the best engines in the world. The boats got started every time I ever started it in 6 years. Imagine having a boat that starts every time in six. You've tried it in 6 years. Go out, come back, get in bed at night to go to sleep. Now, normally I have a high degree of anxiety in my being. That's how I've lived all my life. I'm kind of an edgy person. I've been this way my whole life. And if it would have killed people, it was supposed to be so bad for you, anxiety and stress, I would have been dead at 11. So this is a thing that drug peddlers sell you, called the American Medical Association. They tell you you're supposed to lead a stress-free life. Frogs don't even lead a stress-free life. Nobody leads a stress-free life. It's a myth in order to sell you pills and psychotherapy. But I come back from the boat ride. I have zero anxiety in my being. And when I go to sleep at night, you know what I think about? I don't think about being banned in England. I don't think about Obama, the neo-Marxist. I don't think about him killing America's economy. I don't think of any of that. In other words, my normal fears are gone. All I could think about was the waves and the color of the water and how the boat moved in the water. There was a certain movement of the hull through the water, the way she gripped and moved and gripped and moved and gripped and moved and gripped and moved. The motion became unto itself a meditation. And I thought about something at night, and this is the point of the story. There was nothing exciting. There was nothing inherently exciting about the boat ride, but it was fulfilling. And that comes down to day-to-day life. Many of us are told by Moloch, who owns Fox News and newspapers and magazines and book companies, and everything you turn, he's trying to get you excited into buying something. So he tells you to look for excitement. And the only way to get excitement is by buying something that one of his advertisers peddle. But let me tell you something. You should be seeking fulfillment, not excitement. And that's the problem with American society today. The children have been taught to seek excitement, not fulfillment. So they seek sex instead of marriage and children, because they don't understand the fulfillment of being married and having children. All they've been brainwashed into thinking is that excitement is the end of human existence. And it comes back again to the same thing, whether it be sports or salacious entertainment or bad fast food. All of these things are minimally exciting, but none of them are fulfilling. A simple boat ride up the coast, off the coast of San Francisco, gave me fulfillment, not excitement. And so the moral of the story is, the less excitement that you seek, the more fulfillment you will have. With God's will and your listenership, I shall return.
Savage.